Thank you for downloading or streaming today's episode of the PW Torch Livecast. In just a couple minutes, we'll get you to the show. But first, I want to let you know about our big $1 VIP sale. If you have not become a PW Torch VIP member, this is the best time of year to do it. We are running our $1 sale in association with it being SummerSlam month. We are creating a SummerSlam special section on the PW Torch VIP website that will feature links to our SummerSlam reports dating back to when the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter started in the late 1980s through this year's. We're also creating a collection of our post-SummerSlam pay-per-view roundtables dating back to the mid-2000s. The last dozen SummerSlams have been covered with post-pay-per-view roundtables since we launched the PW Torch VIP website in the mid-2000s, and you can subscribe to that feed on your smartphone and listen to what we had to say the night of SummerSlam for the last dozen years. And you can subscribe to it exclusively as a VIP member on your smartphone or in iTunes. Just like all VIP audio, you can subscribe on your iPhone, Android, or through iTunes, or stream it directly from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. You also get everything else that comes with the VIP membership: ad-free access to our website, exclusive articles, the new weekly Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter chronicling wrestling history in depth, the biggest stories, the biggest events, obscure house show results, TV reports, exclusive columns, cover stories, and so much more. 1,500 plus back issues dating back to the late 1980s. Also, in the month of July, we posted over 130 podcasts for our VIP members. The live casts are great. They're even better when the commercials are edited out. And that's a bonus for VIP members. The commercials are edited out of the PW Torch live casts, and they're available for your convenience on our VIP audio feed, in addition to VIP exclusive shows that only VIP members listen to. I host The Fix with Todd Martin midweek for about 2 hours, and the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show on weekends for about 2 hours. The two top wrestling analysts in the business are part of PW Torch VIP every week. I also record the Wade Keller Hotline every single day. I've recorded it every single day for 8 years. No days off. You wake up, and there it is, the Wade Keller Hotline with the latest breaking news, my answers to VIP member questions, and every Monday night and Tuesday night, a detailed rundown with my analysis of both Raw and SmackDown. So much more comes with the VIP membership. Get full details at pwtorch.com/govip. And the coupon code for our sale is livecast2017. No space, lowercase, livecast2017. Enter that in the promo code box on our mobile-friendly sign-up form, and you are in for $1 for one full month. Or you can take that $9 discount and apply it to a three-month or a one-year subscription. That means that a $99 subscription for 1 year gets dropped down to $90, which equates to paying just on average $7.50 a month for the next year. If you are a fan of our work here on the PW Torch Livecast and my new show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast over at Podcast One, you will love the PW Torch VIP audio lineup. So go VIP for $1 or take $9 off a longer-term subscription. This offer expires soon. Don't miss out. pwtorch.com/govip. Enter promo code LiveCast2017. That's LiveCast2017. No space in there. LiveCast2017. We'd love to have you as a member. We'd love to earn your business for the long run. Find out what people love about their PW Torch VIP membership and get more of what you love in terms of pro wrestling podcasts brought to you by the team at Pro Wrestling Torch.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, we have a lot to discuss here on the post-impact edition of the PW Torch Livecast. It is August 17th, 2017. I am Mike McMahon. He is Andrew Socek. Andrew, I'm not even sure where to begin. I mean, you want to talk about a newsworthy episode. A lot happened here.
Yeah, for sure. I really enjoyed a lot of the show, and then that package at the end, I did not know that was coming. So, yeah, it's tough to know where to begin.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we had a run sheet that we sort of use as a framework, but I guess we can start with that. We're going to get to callers, too, because we want to get your reaction at 515-605-9345. We already have a couple of people on hold. If you want to give us a call, dial us at 515-605-9345. Just make sure you hit the number 1 after you're put on hold. That will tell us that you want to get on the air. So let's start first with the world title situation, because that'll allow us to hit on a couple of things. They came out at first and announced, I guess it was the second segment. Bruce Pritchard came out and announced that El Patron, well, he had said relinquished the title, but the returning Jim Cornette said that El Patron was stripped of the championship. They made it sound to me like El Patron is done with the company and won't be coming back. Bruce Pritchard read a prepared statement and used the terms future endeavors. I don't know. Did you get have the same reaction as me that it did sound like El Patron is probably done with the company?
I did, yes. I thought at first Bruce was trying to sugarcoat it, I guess, in a way. But yeah, when he used that best in future endeavors, that caught me off guard, because El Patron has been on social media sounding like it's just a matter of time before he comes back and he's, you know, serving his punishment. But it does not appear that way at the moment.
Yeah, El Patron and Paige both seem to have some issues with the truth, of course, too. So, Between that and also Jim Cornette, when he came out and made his re-debut or his return to the company, he kind of sliced pretty hard into El Patron and said that they're in GFW, they expect their champions to represent themselves and act in a certain way. And I thought he was taking some not so subtle jabs at El Patron, which again sort of gave me the impression that he's probably done.
I think so too. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that from Cornette either, although he's kind of does what he wants on the microphone. But it would be hard for El Patron to come back, especially as a babyface. I think that is for sure over. But it looks like he's not going to be coming back anytime soon, by the way they were talking tonight.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could think of is maybe they have him return as a heel with LAX, and the storyline is that even though he was found innocent, the company tried to hold him down. I mean, I could see them maybe doing something like that, but my impression is that he's probably done, or at least done for the time being. I highly doubt he returns at any point during this taping schedule, and this is going to bring them all the way till November. So it's going to be a while. But anyway, so Jim Cornette returned. That was one of the big stories to come out of this show. He returned as a representative corporate. He, in storyline, fired Bruce Pritchard and announced that there'd be a 20-man gauntlet match next week to determine the new GFW Global Champion. And they are going with GFW Global Champion and not World Champion. They announced some participants also in that segment. Loki and LAX came out and I think brought up a good point that, hey, Loki was supposed to have a title match tonight, so maybe the gauntlet match winner should face him one-on-one for the championship. Jim Cornette decided that Loki would enter the gauntlet match at number 20. We gave him the best odds to win, and LAX didn't seem too pleased with that, but also seemed to begrudgingly accept it. But what are your thoughts on what they did with the world title? I mean, they obviously need to put it on somebody, and they need to do it relatively quickly, setting up a gauntlet match the way that they did. And also, Borash and Josh Matthews did talk about later in the show how in GFW, a gauntlet match, which is essentially a 20-man Royal Rumble with guys coming in at certain intervals, it would end with a one-on-one match where the winner, once it gets down to two people, it's one-on-one with a pinfall to determine the winner. What were your thoughts on how they set that up to determine a new champion next week?
I think ideally I would have liked if El Patron could have came in and dropped the title to Loki. That might just be me, because I'm still fairly high on LAX, and I think they need a boost, and having Loki have the title would be a big boost. at the moment. It was interesting situation because it does still seem like he was screwed over a bit in that ruling. Like, it seems like he should get that match. I wonder if they'll ever play up. I think it was like 2008, but Cornette basically stripped them of the title because they were like showing too much disrespect in a flag or something. And so they have a history going, so maybe they'll play up into that and they'll get screwed over again. But I'll take a wait and see approach because the match could be exciting, and especially if Johnny Impact's going to be. I don't know if he can be in it or not, but maybe they have surprises and it'll all work out.
Yeah, they actually, that was another bit of big news on this show. Johnny Impact, as it seems he's going to be known, Johnny Mundo, was featured in a very quick video package right at the end of the show. So right after the main event, which we'll talk about later on, they were showing American Top Team. They attacked the referee at ringside. Lashley was trying to restore order, and then Jeremy Borash, he had said, I think, in the headset, we have to go to a video package. What video package? Like, he didn't know what was coming. And it was Johnny Mundo who talked about that no one else in the world is doing what he's doing right now. And a graphic on the screen came up that said he'd be on the show next week. So it seems like he's coming in right away to join Impact. He was, of course, on their live events a couple of weeks ago at the beginning of August. But this is a big deal. That's a big name for them. And if El Patron is gone for good, here's a guy with some name value who can come in and soften that blow a little bit, even though, you know, I'd argue that losing El Patron really isn't a big blow to begin with.
Agreed. And I think Johnny Nitro, Johnny Mundo, John Morrison, I think that's a big step up because I don't think fans see him so much as a WWE leftover because he has done a great job reinventing himself over in Lucha Underground. Worldwide Underground is, I think, one of the best stables of the past few years. So in one sense, I feel kind of bad for Lucha Underground because it makes me think that maybe they're nearing their end since it hasn't been renewed. But on the other hand, I think it's a really good get for Impact and definitely one of the best free agents out there that they could have brought in. I was not expecting him to see him until like March. I didn't know if it was, you know, he had a deal like Rey Mysterio where he would have to be off of TV for 3 months. So that's a big surprise. And I think it's a really good hook for next week.
It's definitely a good hook for next week. I agree. And I also like that I'm not a huge fan of determining a champion in a battle royal or anything like that. But given the situation they were in, to run a tournament would have taken several weeks. And, you know, I'm not really sure that that's the best way to go. I think that the gauntlet match, although it's not my favorite way to crown a champion, at least they're getting it done quickly. They're going to have a champion at the end of next week's show. That to me is a positive. Just because I think that also allows you to move on a little more quickly from El Patron. When you finally get that belt back on somebody else, you don't necessarily remember him carrying it around for the last 2 months.
That's a really good point. Yeah. I think we talked to a caller asked about that a few months ago, if they did a long tournament, and I thought that's what they were going to do is another Bound for Glory tournament. I like the idea of the concept of those, but they never were executed well, and they were either way too complicated with their point system, or people didn't have the exact same amount of matches, or they went on way too long. So I do like that they're moving on as fast as they can in this scenario. I think that's smart on their part.
Yeah, there's so much to go through on the show. I've got it all written down, but man, there was a lot of stuff happening here. What were your thoughts on Jim Cornette? Brought in, it seems like an authority figure type role. I thought that segment, to be honest with you, was really bad the first couple of minutes. When Pritchard and Cornette were going back and forth, like, was it painful to watch. There's just no flow. They were both interrupting each other. Once Pritchard got out of the way, I thought the promo was a lot stronger from Cornette himself. Jim Cornette, I mean, look, he is what he is, but he's a damn good promo. So I thought that Cornette by himself was a good promo. I thought the backstage segment later in the show where Cornette was setting up some guys for the gauntlet match next week was a strong showing by him. I don't mind Jim Cornette as the booker, or I mean, they wouldn't be called the booker on TV, but, you know, the commissioner, whatever you want to call it, that authority figure role. I think Cornette's fine in that role. I think he's pretty good. My concern is, and they were clearly setting this up, was that at some point, Bruce Pritchard is coming back. And he was going all out about how we haven't seen the last of him. And he was screaming at a Cornette. He was screaming at a Karen Jarrett. We've seen authority figure versus authority figure a million times. We've seen it in WWE a million times. We've seen it in a GFW. We've seen it everywhere. I don't want to see that again. So my biggest concern coming out of his return is that it's going to end up resulting in some type of Bruce Pritchard versus Jim Cornette storyline, which I would much rather just see Jim Cornette, the babyface in charge of the company, being fair, booking matches, doing things the fans want to see. I think that's a fresh approach when it comes to authority figures in wrestling, especially in 2017. We're 20 years removed from Austin versus McMahon. We don't need any more heel authority figures in any type of infighting. I think that could be disastrous. But overall, I'm okay with Cornette if they just let him be who he is. What were your thoughts on them bringing him in the role he is, and where do you see this going between him and Pritchard?
Yeah, I'm with you. That those first like 5 minutes were just painful. It seems like they skipped a few chapters or something with Bruce Pritchard, because he started acting heelish. He started acting a little more heelish. And the way they kicked him out of the company made him seem like, I don't know, he was like Emperor Palpatine or something. Like, he was just this completely evil person. And Karen got in his face and just screamed at him, which was one of the most annoying segments I've seen this year. Overall, though, I'm more down on the idea of Cornette. He first came in 2006 as an authority figure. And to me, it's just another thing of going back in time. And personally, I mean, I love Cornette in Midnight Express. Great promo, like you said. But man, he's off his rocker these past few years. I mean, just like wanting to murder Vince Russo, things he said about Kurt Cobain a few weeks ago. It's like one thing after the next that he's creating controversy for himself. And I know people are just like, well, that's just Jim Cornette. But it just kind of rubs me the wrong way, in the sense that I can't buy him as a babyface because he's kind of nuts.
Well, that's a good point. It's going to be interesting to see how the people react to him in that role. It's actually one of the things that I think is difficult about them being in the Impact Zone is it's hard to gauge what's over and what's not by crowd reaction, because I don't think you can trust the crowd. I mean, no. A lot of it's the same people every week. I mean, it's really, I know what I like. I mean, you and I talk about what we liked and what we didn't like and what we think is working and what isn't working, but it can be hard to judge what is over with the audience and what isn't just based upon crowd reaction, because it's almost like it's hard to trust that crowd when it's a lot of the same people every week, or it's tourists that are just in the building and they don't really care. That it can make it difficult to really see what's working and what isn't.
Well, when he came out, he did not get a pop at all.
No.
I just don't know if they didn't recognize him. And then the announcers went to the old, this crowd is stunned.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
I guess. I mean, if that's what you want to go with, I'm just guessing most of them don't have a fondness for him, or maybe they were just tourists. Like you said, I mean, I just don't think people were too familiar with him. So, yeah, it's tough to tell. I'm curious how other people think about him coming into the company.
And I'm also wondering what his role is going to be, too. Is he just on air? Is he part of a creative team or part of that booking committee or whatever it is? I think they're calling themselves consultants. I think that's what Dutch Mantel and Bruce Pritchard both have referenced themselves as. You know, I'm interested in what his role is going to be. But it does seem like Jeff Jarrett is going back to the well a little bit with guys he's familiar with and guys he's comfortable with. Dutch Mantel and Jim Cornette were both part of Jarrett's, you know, core group of TNA 8 or 9 years ago. And then once Jeff got removed from the company, it seemed like Jim Cornette and Dutch were both gone not long after. And I know, I mean, I've watched and read interviews in the past where Cornette has blamed that almost exclusively on Vince Russo. So I'm interested in what his role is. Is it just on air? Is he doing things behind? Is he booking matches? Is he helping produce matches? What is his role outside of just being on the air? I think that's a story to follow here as well. Because, I mean, just a few weeks ago or about a month ago, GFW cut a number of their agents, their producers. And they said it was financially motivated because they just thought they had too many guys. And, of course, Jeff had brought some of his own guys in. So, and Scott D'Amore is another one that he brought back, too. So I'm wondering, I think it's a story to follow anyway, is what's the role of Cornette and some of the other returning guys backstage as well as in front of the camera.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, he was not too long ago in Ring of Honor in an era that wasn't critically acclaimed. He probably has some more excuses for that. I don't know. Maybe they're good excuses. I don't know. Because a lot of times when I hear him on interviews, I agree with what he says and kind of what's wrong with how certain angles played out. But it seems a lot of times he just didn't create something overly memorable or great. But maybe he always did have some sort of handcuffs on him creatively. So I would guess he has some sort of creative input since he's close to to Jeff Jarrett. But yeah, I would not be surprised if he is a part of that team at all.
All right, let's go to our first break. We'll get back. And then as soon as we do get back, we're going to go right to the phone calls with you guys at 515-605-9345. Again, we've already have a couple of people on hold. If you want to get on the phone line, it's 515-605-9345. Just make sure you hit the number one once you get put on hold, and that'll tell us that you want to get on the air. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. We'll talk with callers about this week's edition of Impact Wrestling. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
All right, 515-605-9345 is a number to reach Andrew and I here in the PW Torch Livecast, talking GFW Impact and Destination X with you here tonight on Thursday, August 17th. Let's go to our first caller of the night. I believe this is Cody in Louisiana. Cody, is this you?
Yes, this is. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good.
Yeah, not bad. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. It's actually the first time I'm actually able to sit down and watch Impact. And I got to say, I have never, ever in my entire life been so happy to see Jim Cornette on television just for the purpose of getting Bruce Pritchard off television, even if it's just for a little while. It was great. I was jumping for joy, certainly. But I kind of see what you guys are saying about just – again, yet another on-air authority figure, especially another storyline with authority figure versus authority figure over and over again. So I do have mixed feelings about that. But I wanted to get your thoughts on something that happened before the show even started. In the opening package, when they were hyping Lashley versus Sydal, Lashley made a comment about, I think it was like the difference between a taped event and a live event. And I want to know what you guys thought about that, because I thought it was pretty awkward for him to be saying that, especially since Impact is mostly a taped show.
You know what? That's interesting. Andrew, I didn't even catch that, did you? I was trying to get my, you know, my laptop set up to get the report up on pwtorch.com. So, I mean, I had the show on at that point, but it was one of those video packages where they were just talking about the show. So I was sort of half paying attention while I was trying to set up the report on the website. Did you catch that, Andrew?
I did catch that. Yeah, I forgot to make a note of it, though. I was going to talk about it in the hit list, so that is a good point. Yeah, I thought that was weird as well, because first of all, this show is taped, right? Because they tape it like an hour earlier and then show it on TV, so it's still not live. And then you're telling people for the next 7 weeks that those shows aren't going to be as special as this one because they're not live. So it's just something I wouldn't draw attention to at all.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, if you don't want to diminish the other seven or eight shows that you're going to air here out of this set of television tapings. So I think it's good to make it a big deal that it's a live show, but I don't think you necessarily have to put down the tape shows either. You know, you can just talk about how, hey, it's live and anything can happen without saying it's better than a taped show when 98% of your shows are taped shows.
Yeah, I think it's weird too. It's just, it goes back to the comment that guy made about MMA being the real fighting as opposed to pro wrestling being the fake fighting. I thought it was just odd that even somebody like Lashley, who has been in the wrestling business for a long time, to be saying something like that. Now, I thought he redeemed himself, you know, with his promo right before the match. And I thought, you know, it's been a while since I heard Bobby Lashley talk on the mic, and I think he's done really well. But also another quick comment that I had about the women's championship match. I did enjoy the return of Taryn Terrell and her costing Gail Kim the championship. Cause I think Sienna's really good as the champion. I think she should stay champion for a while, but I also thought that, KM's credibility kind of diminished a lot by having Gail Kim knock him off the apron. What did you guys think about the match in that spot?
I'd agree with you. I mean, I sort of feel like they're not doing much with him at all right now, KM. And, you know, it was a few months now, or a few months back now, that they aired some vignettes with him, him being a bully to people. And I thought those were pretty good. And I think Andrew and I both talked about how they were pretty entertaining and they were showing a character side to KM, but they really haven't followed up and done anything with him since. So, I mean, he's been on the show. He's mostly been a bodyguard for Sienna and sort of escorting her around. So I wish they would do something more with him. And I don't think that having him take a forearm from Gail Kim and fall to the outside and then be completely out of a segment is doing him any good. It's doing him a lot more harm than good, I would say. Andrew, how did you feel on that involvement with KM and are they the Knockouts Championship now, or were they calling it the Women's Championship?
I don't know. I thought it was Knockout still, but I could definitely be wrong on that.
I think the belt said Women's Championship on it, actually.
Oh, did it?
I saw a picture of the belt. Yeah, they were still, I think they were still calling it Knockouts Championship, but I saw a picture of the belt earlier that said GFW Women's Champion on it.
Oh, okay,
yeah, they should
sure.
probably clarify that.
Yeah. But in any event, it had nothing to do with with Cody's question. Sorry about that. What were your thoughts on KM's involvement in the match?
I think I agree with you. Yeah, we both like those segments. I basically think they gave up on him when they were in India. He had a match with Mahabali Shera, I think, and Shera just like squashed him. And ever since, he really hasn't meant anything. He's at the point now where if he just disappeared, it wouldn't hurt her act at all. You might not even like think about him for a month, to the point like, oh yeah, what happened to KM? And it's unfortunate because I thought he was getting over a bit in that role, and those were some fun ideas they had. I agree as well that the Knockouts match should have gone later in the show. They could have hyped that up more. It was good, but it was only like 7 minutes long. I think you had it listed as, Mike. I could have definitely used another 5 to 10 minutes probably to really make it feel special and be like a big moment for Gail Kim. But it looks like they're going to draw it out for a while before they get to any sort of rematch between those two.
I think it
probably should have been longer too. Yeah, just another quick comment. I also enjoyed the return of Petey Williams. I thought that was really cool, him helping Sanjay Dutt win the title. Also, I'm really glad they decided to go with Matt Sydal winning over Bobby Lashley. Last time I talked to you guys, I had the hope that Matt Sydal would kind of swerve people by choosing to go for the GFW World title instead of the X Division title, since the X Division already has quite a bit of stars that they can push. So do you guys think that he'll maybe challenge the winner of the Gauntlet match next week?
I think that's where they're going to go. Yeah, just because they have the X Division title now on Sanjay Dutt, and Trevor Lee could certainly go after him for another rematch, especially with some interference that happened in that ladder match. They also have Desmond Xavier, who just won the Super X Cup and said he was coming after the X Division champion. So there's already a line of challengers in that division. I think they're going to do what you said. I think that Sydal's going to swerve people and say he's going to go after the world title. And you know what? He should. I mean, if he has an opportunity to challenge for any championship he wants to in the company, he should go after the world title. That's the one that everyone on the roster should aspire to. So I think he should go after the world title. I think he will. Andrew, how about you?
Agreed. Yeah, I think if he doesn't, he will look kind of foolish. I mean, as good as the X Division has been repaired this year, it still has a long ways to go to be, I guess, anywhere near close to the heavyweight division. It would be like when Cabal was in, low-key, was in WWE, and he could take any title shot, and he went for the Intercontinental one.
Yeah.
And he came up short. Yeah, I mean, I've been more down on Sydal, but I think he's been pretty good these past few weeks, and that main event was pretty great. So I'm curious to see where they go with that. And I think, yeah, he should definitely go for the heavyweight title.
Yes, excellent, excellent. Well, that's all the questions I have for you guys. I thought it was a great show overall. Hope you guys have a good rest of the show.
Thanks, Cody. Thanks for calling in.
Awesome, thanks.
Another point that I wanted to bring up quickly with Cornette, Andrew, that we didn't talk about when we talked about him earlier in the show. I got a kick out of the line, and I know you guys recapped this podcast on pwpodcast.com last week, where Booker T talked about his run in TNA and how, I mean, he basically admitted to stealing money from the company. He talked about how he was at the theme park when he should have been wrestling, you know, and how he didn't care for anybody, how he refused to put over Matt Morgan, and how he just treated it like a country club and treated it like a vacation. And I thought it was interesting, too. And you know what? Appropriate that Jim Cornette got in the ring and as part of his promo said that they weren't going, you know, guys were going to have to prove themselves in GFW now. They weren't going to allow guys to come into the company and just treat it like it was a vacation. He didn't name Booker T by name, but he was clearly ripping on Booker T.
Yeah, I mean, because that's exactly what Booker T said. He's like, it was great. It was like being on vacation for 2 years. He only had to work 50 dates or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that caught me off guard, too, and I think I got a bit of a laugh out of that. Man, that was quite the interview, too.
Yeah, I just don't know.
I don't know if we'll get back to that later or not.
I mean, yeah, we could talk about it quickly now. I mean, just how tone-deaf do you have to be to sit there and talk about how – I mean, basically gloating about how lazy you were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, sitting there just gloating about how lazy you were and how you took their money and such a disconnect from, you know, I hate to use the term regular people, but I mean, such a disconnect from the general public when he's talking about how he refused to do media because they wanted him to drive his own car. Like, come on. Just, I thought the whole thing came across completely tone deaf.
Yeah, the part that struck me too was when he was asked to put over Matt Morgan. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. You're disrespectful to me. You know, I'm not going to lose in 6-7 minutes. And they're like, okay, we're sorry. We'll go with the original plan. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that either. I'm going home. Like they gave in to what you wanted. And then it's like, you're still being, I don't know, a jerk about it. So, and then, yeah, I mean, he must've made hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it. So he just didn't come off across well at all in that.
Yeah. I mean, and of course we've, although I'm not sure if you and I have talked about it, but I know I've made my feelings known on his commentary on Raw. I don't know one person that thinks he's doing a very good job. So perhaps he's treating that like a vacation also.
Unfortunate, he was one of my favorites back in high school, but man, year after year, it's getting harder.
All right, you know, we got to go to another break. We'll come back and get to more phone calls at 515-605-9345 here in the PW Torch livecast.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast, we are the post-impact edition of the show. I'm Mike McMahon with Andrew Socek. The number to reach us is 515-605-9345. And let's get right back to the phone calls. Up next is Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, how are you doing tonight?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this week?
Pretty good.
Excellent, I would say, so far. Yes.
Hooray!
Ooh, excellent.
Let me just say that for our first official show as Global Force Wrestling, I was probably more impressed than I should have been, which we'll get into some of what impressed me in my second and third question. But my first question is the obvious one. Based upon not really knowing who will enter this particular match, save for a few individuals, who do you think will win both portions of the gauntlet for the gold match next week and thus become the second or third ever but second official under the Global Force rebranding global champion?
You know, I could see them going in a couple of different directions here. I think if John Morrison is in the match, if they decide to put him in the match, I think it would feel like his debut was anticlimactic if he didn't win the title. So I guess if he's in the match, I would say they're going to go with him, because they definitely made a big deal about his debut next week. So he might not necessarily be in the match because he's just debuting. So I think they could certainly come up with a storyline for why he's not there. You know, Jim Cornette could say, we're going with the top 20 guys in the company, and you just got here, so you're not in the top 20, and you're not in the match. So I think it's better to keep him out of the match. But if he's involved in the match, I think he's there to win. But assuming he's not involved, which I think is the better way to go, I think they'll probably go with Low-Key, only because I feel like he's the one in the best position to have a run with the world title right now. Andrew, where do you feel like they'll go in the gauntlet match next week?
Yeah, I was kind of picturing it would come down to maybe Lashley and Johnny Impact, I guess.
That's a good point.
Storyline of Lashley.
I hadn't even considered Lashley because he was in the match tonight. But yeah, I mean, they could put Lashley in that match too. And if Lashley's in that match, I could see him going over.
Yeah, or I could see him coming up just short. Like, he'll just dominate the match and then they'll continue with the storyline of him coming up short. And maybe they'll think, you know, it leads into him looking like he's going to go to MMA because he can't win in wrestling anymore or something. But yeah, I'm with you. If Impact or Nitro Morrison is in the match, I would say he would take it, especially also because they want to get positive buzz. He has name value, which Jeff Jarrett has a history of pushing and going for. So yeah, if he's in it, I would go for him. Otherwise, Low-Key would probably be my next choice as well after that.
My second question concerns the X Division title as well as Global Force branding. What do you suppose is next for current X Division champion and assistant head of Global Force talent Relations Department with Scott D'Amore, Sanjay Dutt. And why do you suppose that Global Force is acting as if Global Force has been, and its titles have been around for 15 years, even though virtually every person that knows about Global Force clearly knows that Global Force has only been in existence since officially January 1st of 2018.
Andrew, where do you see them going with Sanjay Dutt? I mean, I guess tackle that part of the question first.
Sure. Yeah, with Petey Williams coming back tonight, I'm going to guess he turns on Sanjay. I mean, he's already beaten Trevor Lee now a couple times, so I don't see them going back. They'll probably team together to take on Conley and Lee, and then Williams turns on him, and then they'll run that program for a little bit. And then probably just hold off on Desmond Xavier for a little while longer. And yeah, I guess that's kind of what I see. Williams dead.
I think they're going to go with Xavier a little more quickly, just because he's talked about from the very beginning with the Super X Cup about how he wanted to use the win to challenge for the title. And it almost makes me think that, you know, Sanjay retaining the title tonight almost makes me think that that's why he retained it. He retained it to be up against Desmond Xavier in a babyface match for the title. Xavier wins, and sort of like he did with Ishimori tonight. You know, he wins the match. He beats Sanjay for the championship. Sanjay can shake his hand, endorse him, you know, raise his arm. And then he can feud with Trevor Lee, or he could feud with anyone at that point, Desmond Xavier, as champion. Only because I don't think that they wanted to give the belt to Trevor Lee only to have him lose it to Desmond Xavier, you know, in a couple of weeks. I don't think that would have been a good move for Trevor Lee. So it almost made me feel like his loss tonight, especially with the interference, was there to protect him and set him up as maybe a heel to chase Xavier after he wins the title from Sanjay. Because I think that right now Desmond Xavier, I mean, we'll talk about that the finals of the Super X Cup in a little bit when we run down the show. But even though I wasn't a big fan of that match tonight, I think that they're trying to strap the rocket to Desmond Xavier a little bit. And he's eventually, I think, going to get a title shot and probably win the championship, or else I feel like some of the momentum he's gained in this tournament would be wasted.
Yeah, that's a good point.
What else is on your mind, Kylan?
Oh, the second part of the question. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead. So, Andrew, why don't you take that first?
My apologies. I forgot what it was.
The second part of my second question was, if you notice, when Sanjay came out, Josh Matthews acted as both, and most of his titles since the Global Championship have been around for the entire 15 years of the previous company. Why do you suppose this happened, considering that every person who even knows about Global Force clearly is intelligent enough to know that Global Force has only been around since January 1st of 2015 as a show-running company?
That's a good question. I would guess they're just trying to distance themselves from the TNA initials as much as possible, so they don't even want to say it, I guess. Otherwise, Jeff, I guess Jeff Jarrett's just really proud of his own creation as well. And maybe he just assumes like belt lineages are so complicated anyways that he doesn't need to bother cleaning up his own. And I don't know. I don't think there's a great reason for it, basically. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I sort of agree. I think it's more of just them trying to distance themselves a little bit and putting everything and anything that happened in TNA completely in the rearview mirror. That's sort of how I feel it. What they're trying to do is just to no one's going to forget about it, but you know they don't have to talk about it either. I sort of feel like that's what they're doing right now.
And my final question, continuing on this topic, which Andrew was a little bit more cynical in this opinion than you and I were, Mike. But after our first official show under the Global Force branding, do you think that this vision of bringing in Jim Cornette to clean up eventually the authority figure situation and going with new wrestlers such as Matt Sydal was going to be Jeff Jarrett's original vision for Global Force as a standalone promotion without the backing of and more stripped down, cogent and coherent vision help Global Force grow on Pop TV or potentially go to another cable network in January, do you think?
I think it was probably what he was going to do with GFW originally. Cornette was involved with those shows. I don't know if he was involved with the TV pilot. I'd have to go back and look. But I know that Cornette was on a lot of the GFW live events when they ran the ballpark shows, the sold shows, back in 2015. So my initial reaction is that, yeah, you know, Jim Cornette was probably someone that Jeff Jarrett was going to utilize if he was able to get the original GFW amped show on television. I don't think he would have used Bruce Pritchard at the time because, you know, Bruce Pritchard didn't have a podcast then. And he wasn't, you know, he didn't have a few hundred thousand people a week, whatever it is, listening to a show. So I don't think, he didn't have a show. So I don't think that Pritchard would have necessarily been involved. So, yeah, I am of the belief that he probably was planning on using Cornette in that commissioner type role. I think that whatever their vision is needs to lead them to something that isn't Pop TV. And I think still, even right now, it's probably another cable network. You know, I don't think that they can be exclusively a streaming company yet. I think that could 100% happen down the road, but I'm not sure that they're that the audience in general and where we are as viewers are ready to go into 100% streaming just yet, you know, with like a Netflix or something like that. But yeah, I think that they're trying to use this new vision to land on a new network for sure. And we'll see if they're able to do that. And I was also interested tonight, Andrew, that they were talking about some platforms that they were going to be jumping into. I think they called it the Global Wrestling Network, which sort of sounded like their version of the WWE Network. They talked about launching a channel on Pluto TV, which is a free service. I mean, I know I watch Pluto a lot on my Roku, and I know it's available, I think, on the PlayStation Network and other streaming devices. So, yeah, I mean, I'm interested in where this goes. And maybe they're going to try to, in a way, you know, self-distribute, because they talked about on the Global Wrestling Network, you're going to be able to watch free episodes of Impact Wrestling. I don't know if it'll be as they air on Pop. I assume it wouldn't be. It's probably an on-demand type service. But, yeah, you know, I'm I think they're open to any and all options right now, and this new vision is what they're going to try to use to get them there. Andrew, what were your thoughts on all those topics, both if Cornette was sort of the original idea for Jarrett, and also if this new vision could land them elsewhere when it comes to distribution?
Yeah, I think Cornette was. I think he had a podcast a couple years ago. I'm not positive about that, but I know supposedly Jeff Jarrett was talking to Vince Russo and Pritchard and kind of like, you know, feeling out who had the more popular show, maybe trying to get their numbers. So I think he's trying to think of other realms to bring in potential, you know, viewers or listeners. So I think he was probably going to try to hit up Cornette, and probably just because they're old friends too. As for the overall vision, I'm going to stick with my cynicism here because I think the biggest thing we're going to see in the coming months is Pritchard versus Karen Jarrett, and then, you know, Jeff Jarrett's going to come in. And I say this because at Slammiversary, the biggest, most hyped match involved announcers. And I could totally see them going authority figures, pick wrestlers, headed into Bound for Glory. Because I imagine Bruce will be back sooner rather than later. And they will just authority figure feud number 8,000 in professional wrestling.
That's my fear.
Yeah.
Anything else, Colin?
Yeah, I think we all have. You're afraid of that.
Yeah, unfortunately.
One final thing on the Cornette promo minus Pritchard. I really, really enjoy Cornette's portion of the promo by himself because, excuse the expression, but it felt real to me. It felt as if this were a 100% non-work and Cornette was really running a wrestling promotion as a shoot, he would treat his wrestlers exactly as he treated LAX or any heel wrestlers that may work for him, and he wouldn't tolerate anybody treating his company as if it were vacation.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. I thought that, you know, he came across sort of the way he comes across in his podcast, the way he comes across in his interviews. I assume it's genuine. I mean, he sort of felt like he was coming across just as he is. I mean, Andrew, did you get the impression that he was ramping anything up, or that was pretty much the real Jim Cornette we were seeing there?
That seemed pretty tame for him, actually. So
yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he behaves himself, I guess, like when he's on the WWE Network and I imagine in Global Force. I might be in the minority here. I struggle with the fact that he's so upset at like indie darlings like Kenny Omega and Joey Ryan. And now him becoming a featured performer again, I just don't know if that's going to alienate those people or if they really just, you know, don't care. Just think like, you know, that's just Cornette being Cornette. And I could potentially still follow him to Global Force Wrestling. So I think it'll be interesting how he does over these next few months.
Well, that's it for me, guys. We'll talk again next week.
Awesome. Have a good one.
Sounds good, Colin. Thanks for the call.
I will. You too. You're welcome, Mike.
All right, that was Kylan in New Jersey. You can reach us again at 515-605-9345. Andrew and I are going to take another break and come back. We'll start running down everything else that happened on the show. And we've talked about a lot of it, but there's still a lot more that happened on this week's edition of Impact. We haven't even talked about the return of Taryn Terrell. We only briefly touched on the return of Petey Williams. So a lot more to discuss. We'll talk about all of it right after the break. And then we still have our three things to get to later on in the show. This week's theme, the three things that GFW does better than WWE. We're going to get to all that stuff in just a little bit. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, back here at the PW Torch Livecast. Andrew, one thing we should get to before we run down the show is another bit of news that happened this week. I mean, so much happened this week.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, just briefly, before we run down the show, the video with Tyrus that he posted, I believe, on his Instagram account yesterday, where he basically said he didn't like the way he was being used in GFW, and he was taking a knee, and he was going to hold out and sit out these next set of tapings. What was your initial reaction when you saw that video? I'll tell you right up front, my initial reaction, and I could be wrong, and the fact that they didn't address it on the show tonight, I think I probably am wrong. But my initial reaction was, this is work. You know, I don't know where it's going to lead to, but this is a work. What was your initial reaction when you saw that video yesterday?
Initially, I did think it was a shoot. Just because he's been used so weird lately. He hasn't wrestled in months, so I can imagine him getting tired of coming to the shows and nothing happening. But then I thought, I read online that they were going to address that on TV tonight, and they didn't. Before that, I'm like, oh, it's a work. They have something in mind for him. But yeah, also when he complained, it just made me think of like Magnus, like what Magnus had to say. He was frustrated. And it just made me think, like, they are just losing control of some of these wrestlers, and they don't fear going out and just trash talk. So I still don't even know. I would guess a shoot, but definitely not positive. What are you thinking now?
Yeah, I thought it was weird. I mean, only because they were literally setting up him versus Kongo Kong a week ago, and. Granted, I mean, that happened in a previous taping, but it felt like they were moving in a direction with him, and they were going to put him into some type of program and in the ring, and I would assume a rivalry, maybe a short-lived one, but some type of rivalry with Kongo Kong. And now all of a sudden he was upset with the way he was being used. And, you know, one of the thoughts I had earlier today, and again, this is where I thought it was work, you know, I almost wondered, where we didn't know what they were going to do with the world title, would the storyline be that Tyrus wasn't happy about not being involved in the title picture? He goes to Bruce Pritchard, says that, you know, he's been watching his back for the last couple of weeks. And in the back of my head, I really thought that there was a chance that Tyrus could walk out of tonight's show as the GFW champion. And I was actually thinking about that a lot today. You know, would that have been a bad mood? Would that move have been all right, at least explainable, in the sense that he hasn't been losing on television because he hasn't been wrestling? But yeah, in my head all day, it was a work, and how is it going to work into the storyline? But they didn't address it at all. So it doesn't seem like, I mean, at least right now, it doesn't seem like it was a work. It seems like it was a shoot. But I also, the same thing, I think I read today that they were going to address it on the show tonight, never did. So if they address it on the show, I would assume it's a work. But yeah, right now, it's sort of, I'm in a holding pattern if I'm not really sure.
Yeah, and if he didn't go to the tapings at all, which I don't know, he won't be on TV for 3 months, like you said, I think, or 2.5 months or something. So, I mean, maybe they'll put him and Pritchard back together and that's part of the storyline, but it seems too weird of a way to go about that, because he could have just been fired along with Cornette and they could have worked something out. But, I'm sorry, fired by Cornette along with Pritchard. But, yeah, no clue what's going on there.
The other quick news item that we should hit on before we get to running down the show, if you watched the episode of Impact tonight, you would notice that Josh Matthews and Jeremy Borash did commentary alone. The Pope was not there. He announced on social media earlier today that he was done with GFW. I'm fine with it. You know, I don't think the Pope was terrible. You know, if you were to ask me who's worse, Pope or Booker T, it's Booker T in a landslide. You know, but I don't think Pope was great either. And I'm not a fan of the three-man booth. So I'm fine with them moving with two going forward. How about you?
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. I mean, like, Borash is the best of the three, but even if any of the three left, I wouldn't be heartbroken over it.
Yeah.
The Pope, I mean, he was, years ago, he almost broke out as a star, I felt, during kind of that Hogan Bischoff era. He had a good run, and he never recovered after he got hurt from an injury, and he just never clicked in the role of a commentator. He did it for a few years, and he just never got better, never got worse. He was just there, and he didn't have much interesting to say. He could be kind of grating to listen to because he would just fall back into yelling the same kind of things over and over again. But it does also bug me the sense that they didn't acknowledge that he was gone. I mean, I complain about that almost every week when somebody disappears. But, just at some point in the show, just say, hey, Pope's been here, you know, 7-8 years, you know, total. And we parted ways. You know, we wish him the best of luck. That I'm not here to bother to do that, and it drives me crazy.
Yeah, I agree. They could have at least brought it up. I mean, you got two announcers sitting there. They should bring up where their third guy is, and they didn't do it. So I think they did bring up when he wasn't in India. I forget what the excuse was, but I think I said he was on assignment or something. But they did acknowledge that he wasn't there.
Yeah.
That was a 4-week taping where he was missing. So, I wish they would have acknowledged it as well. Before we get to our show rundown, let's squeeze in one more quick break. It's only about 30 seconds, so we'll squeeze in a quick break. As soon as we come back, we'll talk about every other segment on the show that we haven't talked about yet. This is the PW Torch Livecast.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Prichard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast, we're going to run down this week's episode of Impact, everything that happened, because there was a lot that went on. We already talked about a lot of it, but there's a whole lot more. They started the show with a new signature. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I thought this was really cool. The new GFW signature that airs right at the beginning of the show, before any video packages or anything. And it was a little longer than the previous one. The previous one, if you remember, had some clips of TNA history and just some moments, but I thought this was really cool for a company that calls themselves Global Force Wrestling. The graphic, the signature was sort of a globe or a world map, but it was sort of scrolling through different parts of the world with their television network partners popping up as they went by each country. Didn't really, you know, doesn't add anything to the product, but I thought it was a pretty cool visual especially for a company that calls itself Global Force Wrestling to show that, hey, we are on all these stations all across the world. We are a global company. I just thought that was a pretty cool way to showcase that.
Unfortunately, I must have just missed it. I turned it on in the middle of the theme song and that kind of opening package.
Oh, okay, so, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I'll have to go check it out, though.
It was pretty cool. They sort of went through and they're scrolling across. I don't remember if it was shaped like a sphere, like a globe would be, or if it was just, you know, the flat, like, world map. But as they were scrolling country to country, every country that they're on TV, the network sort of popped up, and you'd see it, like, shoot out of whatever like, Sony 6 yeah. popped out of India. And then as they got some of the European countries, you saw, like, when they got over to the UK, you saw the Spike UK logo shoot out. So it was pretty cool. I mean, it showcases that, hey, we call ourselves Global Force Wrestling, and we are seen around the world. Even though they're on a smaller network here in the U.S., you sometimes forget that they are on TV, you know, everywhere on Earth. So I just thought it was a really cool visual. They opened the show with the women's title match, the Knockouts title match right away. We talked a little bit about it earlier with the involvement of KM, but Sienna retained over Gail Kim when Taryn Terrell returned and interfered, setting up Sienna to hit the AK-47 on Gail for the win. I thought this was a good opening match. You know, the Taryn Terrell interference was in return was a little lost by the time you got to the end of the night because so many other things were happening here. And even though, you know, she wasn't as strong a character towards the end of her run, I thought that she was a good character overall, her first run with TNA. And I'm interested in seeing where this goes here. It seems like it's going to take Gail away from the title picture for now. Her and Taryn will, I would assume, feud for the next couple of weeks, maybe a month. And I think Gail Kim will get a title match again because she lost through interference here. But I thought this was a good opening match for the most part.
Yeah, I thought so too. Like I said before, I wish it had been positioned later in the show, or I wish they would have given Taryn Terrell some, like a promo. Like you said, I pretty much forgotten about it by the end of the night. I think that's a good addition. She, I thought, got better as she went along, like the dollhouse stuff. Started out okay. And ended pretty poorly. So it's nice to see that she'll have some form of other run in the company. And hopefully she sticks around a bit because they definitely need quite a few more women on the roster.
Yeah, and you know what? If nothing else, I mean, they have a lot of women right now that I think are really good wrestlers, but unproven on the microphone, I think, would be the right way to put it. And it's not that they're unproven, like they can't do it. It's just that a lot of them have been on smaller shows where maybe they haven't had the opportunity to talk. Taryn Terrell is someone who has had plenty of practice at that. So I would say that she's a solid addition to the roster right now and brings something that some of the other women just, you know, might not have yet. They're sort of cultivating their promo ability, I would say, at this point. Then they went to the long Bruce Pritchard, Jim Cornette segment that we've already talked about, including LAX. They came back from a commercial break, and they went to the Super X Cup Finals. Desmond Xavier beats Ishimori in about 9 minutes. I thought, you know, I don't know. I'm interested in your opinion here. I wonder if I had built this matchup a little too much in my mind, but I was a little disappointed. You know, I didn't think it lived up to expectations. I was expecting more of a show stealer, and I wasn't, you know, I didn't really feel like that was the case with this match. And maybe they weren't supposed to be, or they were told not to be. But I feel like these two guys in particular could do a lot more than what they showed us here.
Yeah, I was disappointed as well. I thought as soon as they hit another gear, the match ended. Like, I was just getting into it at that point. And I checked your report quick, and I think you had it at 9 minutes. And, yeah, I was hoping for 15 minimum. Like, ideally, like 20 minutes. It's one of because they gave Drago and Desmond Xavier 16 minutes two weeks ago.
Yep.
Yeah, it was one of those matches that kind of makes you more fed up with the authority nonsense, because if they had chopped that in half and given those minutes to the match, the entire show would have been more exciting to watch, and Desmond Xavier would have felt more like a star if he had a star making match. So, yeah, definitely a disappointing ending to that tournament. It wasn't train wreck or awful by any means, but it was just fine, basically, I thought.
Yeah, you know, I was hoping, because I thought the tournament itself was really well put together overall. But this didn't, like you said, it didn't feel like the star-making moment for Desmond Xavier. And maybe that's because they want the star-making moment to be him winning the X Division Championship. If that's the case, then okay, you know, I understand it, but I just felt like this should have been more of an exclamation point for him, and it didn't feel that way. You know, I almost feel like his win in the semifinals was a bigger moment than this one was, you know, beating Drago, like you said, in about 16 minutes. I just felt like that was a bigger moment for him than even this was, and I liked his promo after the match. He said that this is a moment that he will never forget, and it's also a moment that everyone else will never forget, because whoever the X Division champion is by the end of the night, Desmond Xavier said that he was going to be coming for that championship. So I think that that's where he's headed next. I think it's probably going to be Desmond Xavier and Sanjay Dutt at some point. And maybe, you know, maybe that's what they're doing here. Maybe they wanted the big moment for him to be raising the title as opposed to raising that trophy. But I just felt like this match could have been could have been a lot bigger than what it was.
Yeah, I hope they bring it back next year, this tournament. I hope they make it even bigger, like 16 or 32 men. Yeah, and, you know, overall it was a hit. Just ended on a bit of a down note overall.
Then they went to the X Division Championship match. Sanjay Dutt retained in a ladder match in 16 minutes. This saw interference from Caleb Conley, who tried to help Trevor Lee win the match. But that brought about the return of Petey Williams, who hit the ring and took out Caleb Conley in order to even the score, or even the sides. So Sanjay Dutt retains in 16 minutes. I thought this was a pretty exciting match. I mean, they worked it pretty safely, which I'm fine with. But it still felt like to me like the match had some big spots, even though they weren't going crazy and killing each other. Everyone came out unscathed and healthy, which, considering they're going to tape a lot of episodes of Impact over the next couple of days, that's a good idea. And I think that we're probably going to see Sanjay and Xavier for the title here at some point. But what were your thoughts on the ladder match, both the booking of the two guys with the run-ins, and then Sanjay Dutt ultimately going over in the end?
I was more down on it initially, the ending at least. I enjoyed the match, but I think you kind of explained it well. Like, if Trevor Lee had won, then he's probably going to drop the belt to Desmond Xavier soon. So maybe they push him to the side a bit, build him up. Maybe someday that'll be a bigger match. I still don't have full confidence in then pushing Trevor Lee, but yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked Petey Williams coming back. He looked good. I think it's fun and to have surprises like that, even if he only works for a couple months for them. And I can't help it. The Canadian Destroyer is one of my all-time favorite finishers. It's ridiculous, but yeah, it's pretty awesome. So
no, I like it too.
Excited to see that again.
Yeah. Same here. And that's one of the cool things about theirs. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. You go ahead.
I was going to say that's one of the exciting things about the way that they tape television, and it's one of the things that they should use as an advantage. You know, they could bring Petey Williams in for the next 5 days and get 3 months' worth of television out of him. So that's – being live is better, don't get me wrong, but it's an advantage when you have someone like that who's kind of in semi-retirement. You could bring Petey Williams in for 5 days, and you get 3 months' worth of TV out of him. So I think overall – it's a win-win.
Yeah, I like that. It definitely helps things feel fresh, because like nobody in WWE comes in for 2 months and then just disappears, unless it's like Goldberg, I guess. But like a name from the past who can still go, like Mr. Kennedy, Sean Devore, they're not going to show up for a 2 month program. So that is kind of fun that they're able to shuffle people in and out like that.
Then they went to the debuting OVE. Which is the Crist brothers, Dave and Jay Crist. They beat Jason Cade and Zachary Wentz in 2 minutes. I didn't think this was a very good debut. I liked the vignettes a lot leading into this match that they've aired over the last couple of weeks. But I thought that OVE sold too much at the beginning of the match, especially considering we have no idea who Zachary Wentz and Jason Cade were. It's not like they were wrestling main guys on the roster. So I thought they sold too much at the beginning of the match, and then it just didn't seem like a big moment when they won. I mean, they won the match, they climbed to the turnbuckle, and then they just sort of slumped out of the ring and walked back up the ramp without much fanfare. So it looked like, too, that they were being booked as baby faces. I thought from the vignettes that they were coming in as heels, but it looked like with the way the match went that they were booked as baby faces. But yeah, overall, this whole debut was kind of a thud for me, and I just felt a little more confused about who they were coming out of it.
Yeah, I agree. And man, like the match started out with one of them taking like that knee to the face, and I thought he was like knocked out from that. I don't know if there was mistiming after that as well. It just seemed clunky that they just didn't work well together. I like the look of OVE. They stand out, I think, from other teams on the roster. And I also like that Jeremy Borash said that they beat the Young Bucks. I think that makes them credible. And it's cool that they mentioned, you know, people from outside of their promotion. So I thought that was very smart on his behalf.
Especially the Young Bucks.
I still have. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. And not a good debut, but I'm definitely still curious to see how they pan out in the coming months as well.
I mean, for the most part, and I don't think they're going to stick around because, like I said, it's the first time we've seen them. But Jason Cade and Zachary Wentz, we've never heard of these guys. We've never seen them. and they looked more athletic than OVE did. I mean, they were doing some more flashy.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it almost came across that they, even though they lost the match, they at points in the match looked better than OVE, especially in the beginning. So I just thought that that was weird, very weird, the way the match was put together. Then they went to a backstage segment where people were trying to get in on the Gauntlet match next week. This part, I didn't get at all. But Moose and EC3 walk up to Jim Cornette, who's on the phone, trying to get themselves into the Gauntlet match next week. But they walk up to Cornette like they were a tag team. I mean, these two guys that were feuding over the Grand Championship a couple of weeks ago, and they both walked up to him at the same time like they were just hanging out backstage. I didn't get that at all. And then Eli Drake came in. Excuse me. Eli Drake came in, and he got himself booked in the match with Chris Adonis. But Cornette, like a babyface authority figure should, looked at the gloating looked at the gloating Eli Drake and said, "Hey, you know what? You want to prove how good you are? You're going to be in the Gauntlet match next week, but you're going at number one, and then you can show everybody how great you are." So I like that. I think that that's a good move for a babyface authority figure to make. But I was a little baffled at Moose and EC3 almost looking like they were best friends.
I was too. It was almost like a new creative team came in and didn't quite know the storylines and, you know, just grabbed two people. And they also did the thing that WWE always does where they cut to somebody on a phone backstage, which is ridiculous. But I thought Eli Drake came across really well here. He's a good talker. And also just to note, I completely forgot about this before. I thought it was interesting how Jim Cornette didn't know the other guys in LAX. He's like, I don't know who you guys are.
That's a good point.
So I just did not think that was a good line for him to say, that he basically admits he doesn't watch the show. But okay. I just needed to get that out there.
Yeah, that was at the beginning of the show, the first time he was out there when he was with LAX. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was a little weird too. And then they went to Lashley versus Seidel in the main event. And I thought that this match was good. I thought that they told a good story here with Lashley dominating for most of the match, and then Seidel sort of catches him, you know, and wins. Not a fluke win, but it wasn't like it was an even 50-50 match. I mean, Bobby Lashley was in control for most of this thing and gets caught late. We'll talk about the post-match stuff in a second, but what were your overall thoughts on just the main event match itself?
I enjoyed it quite a bit. Yeah, I thought it was a really good match. It was a good underdog story. I don't know how this is going to play out. I don't know if like that's a great idea to go with the story, if this superstar is going to leave the promotion to do MMA and then have him lose. But I liked that post match stuff that we'll talk about. So maybe there's more to it and then it will make sense. But so a little bit of mixed feelings, but I did enjoy the match.
Yeah, I almost got the impression that and I don't think they're going to do this, but it almost looked like they were planting seeds of Bobby Lashley turning babyface after the match. So after the match, they're on the outside. Brian Hebner raises Matt Seidel's hand on the ramp, right at the bottom of the ramp, where American Top Team was standing watching the match. And American Top Team looked really disappointed in something. They didn't really say if they were disappointed in Lashley losing the match, if they were disappointed in the referee, if they were disappointed in whatever, but they didn't look like Dan Lambert didn't look happy sitting at ringside. And I wonder, because right after the match, Brian Hebner is raising Matt Seidel's hand on the ramp. And I forget who it was, but somebody from American Top Team, one of the fighters, put a rear naked choke on Hebner and started to choke him out. And then Lashley runs in and immediately breaks it up and starts yelling at his American Top Team teammate to be like, I think he was saying, "Hey, you know, we can't do that, or we got to keep it cool, or whatever he was saying. I forget exactly what the line was, but he was trying to keep the peace. You know, and it almost looked like, that's what it was. I looked at it on the report here. He was screaming at those guys to calm down. So it almost looked like he was, I mean, they were trying to come across, obviously, like it was a shoot thing. But Lashley had broken it up. He was telling his American Top Team teammates to calm down. That, combined with the fact that all those guys looked so disappointed after Lashley lost, makes me sort of wonder, are they going to tell a story here where Lashley turns on American Top Team and becomes a babyface? just because he was trying to save the referee after the match. I don't think they necessarily should go there with him, but it sort of, I think, planted the seeds to maybe do something like that down the road. They could also paint Dan Lambert. I mean, because Dan Lambert said on the conference call with Lashley the other day that he's a wrestling fan. So they could, in storyline, paint Dan Lambert as, you know, the guy who's trying to take Bobby Lashley away from pro wrestling, and now Bobby Lashley fights back and says no. And it struck me as, you know, I wonder if they're going to go babyface with Lashley here.
I could definitely see that as well. I wouldn't mind the idea of him leading like a heel stable of MMA guys. I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about those guys to know if that's even a feasible option, if they would be able to work a little bit. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, I noticed some people in the crowd cheering for Lashley during that match. So maybe it's time, or they think it's time for him to turn. I think he's been one of the best heels in wrestling over the past 3 years or so.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, they would need some more strong baby faces. So I think it will be curious to see how Johnny Impact comes in, if he's going to be a face or a heel. I'm probably a face, but so he would make a good opponent. But they are kind of running out of opponents for him on the baby face side, I feel, at the moment. So maybe that's what they're kind of leaning towards.
Yeah, I wonder if – I mean, here's the other thing too. I don't think that GFW would be playing up the angle of American Top Team wants Lashley to leave pro wrestling if they thought that Lashley was going to leave pro wrestling. That's been a story that's been out there as being a shoot story, but I don't know. I mean, they've done some dumb things. Don't get me wrong. Having an MMA fighter talk about how they're real fighting and wrestling is fake. I mean, they've made some really weird decisions, but I don't see them playing up that he might leave if he was really going to leave. I think if he was really going to leave, they would just have him put some guys over and then leave. You know, I don't think they'd be talking about it as much as they are. So it feels to me like this is some sort of storyline that they're going to go with.
I think so too. And I think it's probably one of the more interesting ones now that they've actually got involved. I wasn't a huge fan of those videos, of course, but now that they're actually in the impact zone, maybe it will lead to somewhere interesting. So yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes.
Yeah. And of course, again, just like with Petey Williams, you've got 5 or 6 days of tapings here that you're going to tape 3 months of TV. So you could have those guys down for a few days and get quite a few episodes of television out of it. So we will see. We will see where that ends up. Let's go right into our top three segment now. We're all cut up on breaks for the most part. So let's go right into our top three segment. This week's top three, the top three things that GFW does better than WWE. Andrew, what did you have as your number three?
Yeah, my number three, I'm just going to go the X division is superior to the cruiserweight division.
That was also my number three.
Oh, is it?
It was also my number three. So we can be in full agreement.
Yeah. Yeah, we just saw Akira Tozawa beat Neville. So that's the only noteworthy thing that has happened really since Austin Aries. And before that, nothing was going on. They work at the cruiserweights work at WWE style. It's a little slower paced. It's not as long of matches usually. And the X division has gotten, I think, 3 main events this year so far. So they are definitely treating it more seriously. And it's just overall more fun to watch, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're treating it more seriously. And I think that GFW has a better roster. The WWE roster is deeper. They have a lot more guys.
Yeah.
But I think that the GFW roster within that division has more guys that they can push as top guys right now. I mean, the biggest issue with the WWE Cruiserweight division, and you just touched on it, Neville left. Who's going to challenge Neville? Austin Aries left. Who's going to challenge Neville?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew, and it didn't seem like they had anybody ready to really go after him. Of course, Tozawa won the Cruiserweight title this week. We'll see where that goes. But it didn't seem like they had anyone ready to really challenge Neville for the Cruiserweight championship. I think with GFW, even though you could say that Sanjay Dutt is not as strong of a champion as Neville, I don't think he is. It seems like they've built their roster to have more challengers ready to get involved there. And You know, you got to assume, I think DJZ is healthy again, so he could be returning soon. They've built up Desmond Xavier over the course of the Super X Cup. They've done a better job, I think, establishing talent within that division than WWE has. And that's saying something when you think of the fact that WWE has a one-hour show every week devoted to that division. We still think that the 15 minutes or so that it gets on Impact on a weekly basis is better than the 1 hour WWE gives it on 205 Live. So, yeah, I totally agree with you, though. I think the X division is something that they do better, or the Cruiserweight division in general is something they do better than WWE. What did you have as your number two?
Number two, this is more of a weird, quirky two-parter, but I tweeted about this last week. People in Global Force Wrestling, when they watch a match on TV, they aren't watching it at like a 90-degree angle. They're actually looking like they're watching the screen straight on like a regular person does. And the other part is that when somebody is interviewed in Global Force Wrestling, the interviewer doesn't end the segment by awkwardly looking off into the distance. Like, they will look back at
the... Oh, that's great.
It's one of my least favorite things in wrestling. It gets me every time. I cannot stand it. They look back at the camera and say back to you or say something. Like, they acknowledge the camera is there. They don't just forget. Drives me crazy in every single WWE segment. I hate it. Therefore, GFW does it right. They don't do it in a quirky way. So that is my number two.
Totally agree. I mean, aside from the Jim Cornette segment tonight where they interrupted him on the phone, which is something WWE does a lot, I think pro wrestling is simulated sport. That's what it is. So yeah. If you're simulating a sport, you know, I'm sitting here as we speak watching the Jacksonville Jaguars, Tampa Bay Buccaneers preseason game. You know, you're not going to see them cut to a camera on the sideline of one of the NFL head coaches who isn't going to know that the camera's there and suddenly start talking about strategy and, hey, you know, the next three plays we're going to run are this, this, and this, because they just pretend like the camera isn't there. 100% agree with you. You're simulating sport. Actually do it and don't pretend like the camera doesn't exist. 100% agree. It's something that drives me crazy too. My number two was video packages. And WWE does a really good job of this too. I mean, I'm not trying to minimize it and say that they don't do a very good job. But I think since the return of Keith Mitchell and some other production people on... having a hard time recalling names, but I know that they've returned. Is Sahadi back with the company again?
I don't know if he ever left, but I think he might be back doing videos. Okay. I could be wrong though too.
But yeah, whatever it is. So they've done a lot more of these video packages lately, and I know there's been some guys on the production side who have returned who were gone for a while. I think there's someone there. Eric Tompkins is another guy who I think does a lot with videos. In these video packages. So whoever's involved with it, whoever is in charge of it, I think that GFW does a more efficient job of using those video packages to put over and hype upcoming matches. To me, WWE uses them a lot, but it's just sort of recaps of feuds. You know, WWE video package very rarely has new content involved with it. It's just, here's a highlight. Here's highlights of what have happened with their in-ring promos, clips of sound bites of their in-ring promos sort of filtered in. With GFW, one of the things I like both with the Super X Cup and with just, you know, I think Lashley and Seidel had one tonight as well. The backstage stuff, the video packages that are hyping matches, they're new content. You know, it's guys sitting down talking about why a match is important, why winning the Super X Cup is important. It makes the matches feel more important. That's ultimately what they should be trying to do. So WWE doesn't do a bad job of it. And if you miss the thing with WWE is if you miss every single Raw and SmackDown, for example, you could turn on SummerSlam this weekend. They're going to air a video pretty much before every single match, and you'll get a pretty good idea of the storyline that leads up to that match. GFW does that a little bit. They show clips, they show highlights, but it's usually the sound that's dubbed over it is usually some type of interview clip that we haven't heard before, where it's somebody talking about why they're going to win or what a win is going to mean or why that winning the X Cup is important. I just think they do a better job in that regard of producing those video packages and making them feel more like I think they should feel. You know, I feel like they do a better job overall of producing those things.
Completely agree. And they do it on probably 10% of the budget, if that.
Exactly. They've done a
much better job of helping characters with those videos. Veterans of War, OVE had some interesting stuff, and just those sit down ones. Sometimes, you know, we point out that they say things they shouldn't, but overall, I like that they make the wrestlers feel realistic, like real people. And LAX had some great ones as well not too long ago. Definitely another really big, great improvement in this latest era.
What did you have as your number one?
This is another one that drives me crazy. This is probably more on WWE, but in Global Force Wrestling, they say the word wrestling. They don't say sports entertainment. They call them fans. They don't call them the Global Force Wrestling universe.
90 seconds.
It is that type of dialogue that every single time will take me out of the action. Like, I hate WWE universe. It is nails on a chalkboard. I think like before Great Balls of Fire, I was counting it in my mind, and within 10 minutes, they literally said it like 11 times. It's just nonstop madness. It feels so fake. It feels so staged, and nobody feels real when they have to say that stuff. It takes me out of it every time. As good as WWE is, and I know they have the bigger stars, the bigger production, the better matches, usually that stuff just can ruin my enjoyment every single episode when I hear stuff like that.
Yeah, you won't get a disagreement from me either. I think WWE Universe sounds ridiculous. I think that they have to constantly use sports entertainment instead of wrestling is ridiculous. I you won't get a disagreement from me. I think it's absolutely right. My number one was roster overexposure. I think that GFW, we've talked about this plenty of times in the past too, but you don't see everybody on the GFW roster every week. You don't see, you know, when Lashley was champion, you didn't see him every week. You certainly didn't see him in the ring every week. So I think that they do a better job of just protecting their guys. You know, Eli Drake, EC3, and Moose, they were on the show, but they were on the show for 10 or 15 seconds tonight, you know, or maybe 30 seconds with some little stuff backstage. They weren't in matches every single week. And in WWE, oftentimes with 5 hours of television every week, they need to put guys on TV, and they got to fill that time, and I think it overexposes their talent too much. So with GFW, you've got a 2-hour show. You don't feature every guy on every episode. I just think it keeps guys fresher. You know, I think it overall it keeps guys a lot fresher, and I think that's a good thing for the roster ultimately. I think it's a good thing for the show ultimately too. You can't miss people if they don't go away. So I think sometimes it helps some of those guys feel a lot more special. You know, Bobby Lashley at one point earlier in the year, when he was GFW champion and he didn't have a match on TV for a while, I think they did it going into Slammiversary. They had kept him off of television. He was on, you know, cutting promos and interviews, but I'm not sure. And I could be wrong, but there was one title match that he had, one title defense he had this year, and I think it was going into Slammiversary where he had not been in the ring in a one-on-one match in a long time, and it made that match that they eventually built to feel really special because you don't see Bobby Lashley in the ring every week, and being able to just made it feel like a bigger deal.
That is an excellent one. Somehow I did not even think of it. I mean, say like, I've been watching wrestling for many, many years, but so I've seen like John Cena's entire career. Basically I've seen Randy Orton's. I've literally seen these people wrestle 500 times.
Oh, sure.
More.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Cena slowing down in this aspect, and I don't wish them harm in any sort, but if like Randy Orton was like, I'm going to take 2 years off, I would have zero problem with that. And that's not his fault. It's just that he's, you know, these people wrestle every single week, year after year after year. And during the days of the brand split, when they didn't care, like a guy like Dolph Ziggler literally wrestled like 80 televised matches a year. It just got to be a level of insanity. So yeah, Global Force Wrestling is doing a really good job of that right now. In the past, you would see guys like AJ Styles wrestle every week, basically, or, you know, quite often, but I like that as well, that they are holding off on people. You know, LAX didn't wrestle tonight, and they were a huge part of the show the past few weeks.
Yep.
So it is nice to give these people a week off so you don't get sick of them. I mean, we'll probably talk more about in the post show, but like Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, I have zero excitement over this match, and both guys are fantastic, and I just don't care because I've seen them wrestle so many times, and it's unfortunate that so many people on the roster just don't feel special, and that's probably why Brock Lesnar is one of the few people that really does feel like a true star.
Yeah.
Because he gets to go away now and then. So, yeah, no, great. Excellent pick.
All right. Well, we got to get out of here. And I knew this was going to be a loaded show, and we are all the way up to the hour and a half window that we have. So we got to get out of here for this week. But before we do, anything else you want to plug?
Wade did plug PW Podcast, the commercial, so check that out. Otherwise, Andrew, S-O-U-C-E-K on Twitter. And I will have the GFW hits and misses tomorrow up on the Torch.
You can read my tonight's Impact Report at pwtorch.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. And before we get out of here, we got to plug VIP. Andrew and I, as soon as this show ends, are going to record a VIP after show. We're going to talk Baron Corbin cashing in Money in the Bank on Tuesday SmackDown. We're going to preview SummerSlam. And we're also going to talk about, is there anybody in the main roster that we would send down to NXT in order to freshen up their character? It's something that Triple H talked about on his NXT conference call earlier this week. So we'll hit on some topics on our VIP after show. That's exclusively for PW Torch VIP members. You get a whole lot more than just me and Andrew, though. If you're a PW Torch VIP member, you get the Fix of Ton Martin, you get the Bruce Mitchell audio show, you get the daily Wade Keller hotlines, you'll get a pay-per-view roundtable after SummerSlam on Sunday, you get access to the PW Torch newsletter, you get a whole bunch of stuff. So Wade's going to tell you more about PW Torch VIP, and then that'll do it for this week. So Andrew and I want to thank you guys for listening, we thank you guys for calling. For VIP members, we'll talk to you in a couple of minutes on the VIP after show. For everybody else, we'll talk to you next week here in the PW Torch Livecast.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The every single day Wade Keller Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Wade Keller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.